Attack Zone, Episode 2, Team Evaluation. Hello, Dice fans. You have stepped once again into the Attack Zone, bringing you the A to Z of competitive Dice Masters. Joining me tonight, as always, are 2015 Canadian National Champion and 2016 WKO Regional Champion, JT. How are you, JT?
Very good. I got my lawn mowed today. I was doing some work outside. Feeling good. Yourself?
Doing pretty well. Got the guest room finally set up in our place, and things are going well. We also have the brains behind a lot of our most successful decks, Randy. How's it going, Randy?
Hey, it's going all right. I did not do any yard work or get anything done around the house today, so got that going for me.
I call that a win. And, of course, I am 2015 U.S. Nats Top 8 competitor and state PDC runner-up, Dave. Now, if you didn't listen to our previous episode explaining what it is we're doing with the Attack Zone, I strongly suggest you do. But suffice it to say that we are bringing you competitive topics still, but framed around our own search for improvement. So each week, we're bringing you topics that we want to bring up so that we can share our strengths for one another's improvement. And we can also bring attention to our weaknesses so that we can learn to address them. And part of addressing that is our homework. So we each had some things in mind that we wanted to do between the last recording and this recording. How'd it go?
Well, I think it went pretty well on my end. One thing I wanted to focus on was, playing more aggressively, playing some team builds that were more aggressive. I gave a whirl to the Bard Blitz team that's been making its rounds. I play tested with that a bit, enjoyed that, and I also built a Fiend team for some local events. Just some casual play, and I really liked the way that flowed, and it was very aggressive, getting some big heavy hitters out, early and often, and just swinging, forcing my opponent to block. It's a different play style than what I was used to with my Mask Ring team, but it's nice. It's a nice change of pace, and knowing it's okay if I make mistakes doing this, and just learning to play more aggressively.
Good. Now, I remember a part of this, Randy, for you. You were looking to address some of the impatience that you perceive in yourself when you're playing. How do you think this helped you along your progression?
I don't know. It's hard to say right now. I think playing with different types of teams, I'm just getting more familiar with them, is going to help in the long run. Everything I've done so far is really just casual kitchen table with these teams, especially this Fiend team. Even though I took it to the local shop, it was really just some casual teach people how to play games, and here, this team I built along the way, let's see what it can do.
Fair enough.
Yeah,
my homework was to practice replaying scenarios in response. So one of the weaknesses I shared is that I'll often have a plan, and then something will change between when I form the plan and the next turn when I need to act, and I'll have missed it. And so just to practice replaying and make sure that scenario is what I think it is before I take action. So the carpentry version of that is measure twice but cut once. Make sure that you've got exactly what you need. And I've done actually a good bit of that. I find that it's much, much easier when I'm observing and trying to play ahead for one or other player. As I'm watching a game, as I'm observing, that's much, much easier to do that versus when I'm thinking it through as a player and get a little bit excited about thinking maybe I see lethal. So there's still some work to do. But Dave, the other night when Stuart and Isaac were playing, especially that's kind of when I noticed there are four of us on the call, and I'm kind of playing through the scenarios in my head, and I was able to make sure that I was doing that with consistency. So kind of excited to see that and to know that and know that that's that there's probably some progress made there. What about yourself?
So I wanted to play more. Part of my problems come from getting a bit fatigued towards the end of tournaments, just mentally. And I actually did not get as much of that done as I'd like. I played a little more, but it's not enough. I've been trying to target some later night times so that I can focus on making decisions while I'm tired. I played marginally more. It's my fault. I can't even say that my dog ate it because I don't have a dog to eat my homework. I have done more rolling through turns and working scenarios than I've done, which is good, but it's not enough. I have to bring those decisions to more games now. And like I said, trying to do some of that late night and so forth. Part of it is right now trying to lock in on a team. I think I'm close on something that I want to really play with for a little while. Leading up to the WizKids Opens round two in a couple of weeks. But I'm not quite there yet. Getting there.
Good. Good. Well, maybe we can set up some Hangouts games, and maybe there'll be a few listeners that want to play a few games with you late in the evening Eastern time zone, right?
Yeah, we're going to have to figure some of that out.
The only time zone that matters.
All right. Well, this week... We're each bringing topics to the table, as I said, and this week JT brings us our topic, which is all about team evaluation. So, JT, please tell us a little bit about why you brought this one to us today.
I think my ability in piloting is far outweighs my ability in brewing, right? So I want someone else to show me something that's good, and then I want to figure it out, know it inside and out, and be able to play it to its absolute maximum potential. So, so really evaluating a team list, you know, if you see a tournament report and you see somebody's list, or, you know, you read through a tournament report, maybe someone's taking pictures of all the teams that they played. And of course they're giving you the feedback, what they thought was going on and how they played against that team. But maybe it's a team that you look at and you say, oh, maybe I want to try that. So what do you do? How do you approach that and figure out what that team is supposed to do, how it's supposed to work, how the flow is supposed to go, what the buy order looks like, how it reacts to other teams. And so some of that really is it is net decking and just saying, okay, I'm going to start there. I'm going to figure it out. But from a nuts and bolts perspective, you know, when you look at a team, and you've got to figure out, we talked about this, you've been a big proponent of this in terms of building a team, you know, find a win condition, put a couple cards for a win condition, a couple cards to support it, and a couple cards that to protect it from threats, right? So you look at a team, you've got to be able to identify some of those things. You've got to be able to identify all of those things, let's be honest, and then figure out how they all play together. So for me, I think this is a really important topic. I'm pretty excited about talking about it, because I think as you learn to do this and you learn to do it well, you can assimilate a lot more knowledge about the game a lot more quickly and really become a better pilot of varying types of builds. So that's my heart in it. That's where I think it really comes to play. And I think that as we get into it, hopefully the listeners, you guys will see what we mean.
Absolutely. You know, you touched on the nuts and bolts part of it just a little bit there. And, I completely agree. You know, it goes back to deciding not just deciding it's good because someone told you or someone else won with it, but it's knowing that it's good and why it's good and how it works. Very few teams can you just slap down on the table having never really done a lot with it before, or not fully understanding it, and win. You can sometimes do well if depending on how the team's constructed or if you think you kind of get the idea, but it's very difficult to win, and it becomes pretty evident if you're observing, or really if you're just in your own head, you know, when you're not sure what decision to make or whatever else. So absolutely very, very important, and with some events coming up, very timely too.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that this will do, if you get good at seeing a team and identifying how it works, like, it will help you as you sit across something that maybe you've never seen before or something that you didn't expect, And, I guess a quick example on that, at the Detroit WKO, I sat across from a guy named Ben, and congrats, Ben, actually, on winning the Michigan State PDC recently. I think I've got that right. I think you're one in the same. But Ben had a Vicious Struggle team, and so I looked at it and I thought, oh, no, I got to play Vicious Struggle. Okay, well, I brought Constantine Antihero. So Vicious Struggle is the win condition, right? One of the support pieces is the Silver Surfer Global. Yeah, that's how that team works. I'm going to stab myself, and you're going to take more damage than me, and we'll just go and burn each other down. And so I thought, okay, I've got Antihero, I've got Action Hate. I should be okay to run my normal run my normal stretch and get into the way I want to play my team versus the way Vicious Struggle normally forces you to play. And just try and buy more Vicious Struggles and get ahead in life and burn faster. And then as I'm looking at the other cards that are on the table, there's more support. I'm right on this, but I think probably, you know, Injection Fairy Lily and some other things that allow a player to take damage. But one of the things that he had as really anti-threat tech on the team was Parallax. And Parallax, while it can be an energy sinkhole, it can also completely neuter Constantine Antihero. And so,
yes, you can.
I'm in this mode, right? I see Vicious Struggle. I'm like, okay, I've got the tech I need to play against that. I can do my thing. And then as I'm evaluating his other cards, I got to that really that third part, that protection piece, and realized, wow, he's going to be able to protect against my plan. I've just got to go Vicious Struggle minigame and buy as many Vicious Struggles as I can and abandon what I wanted to do because of what I identified on the other side of the table. So not only is this important in learning to play a team, but it also helps, I think, immensely as you sit down in a competitive environment and have to do this on the fly very quickly.
Oh, I completely agree. You know, it makes me think of a time at the state PDC that we went to where I sat down across from a team that was using some weenie characters, your elf thieves and your wasps and so forth, as well as Human Torch to try and burn the other person down. And they had been doing pretty well with it throughout the day. So my team I was playing, I was mostly going opening turns Constantine, Antihero into Polymorph into some of my bigger characters, depending on what I needed there. But I sat down and I saw what she had, and I realized, no, I can't do any of that. I'm looking over this team. What I need to do is Iron Fist into Zombie Magneto. And once I had the two of those cards out, it really changed the game. She would get Dwarf Wizard, and then she said, man, I'm not actually even sure which one of those cards I need to blank. But it was that quick evaluation of saying, man, you have this. Okay, I need to change my opening. But luckily, the team's built for it too, which is another part. It's knowing the versatility of your team, whether you net decked it or whatever else.
Yeah. I mean, that's a critical point, right? Just knowing and then responding. You know, knowing what you've got and figuring out really how to respond.
So. Right. So take us through it, JT.
Well, so the very first thing is just to net deck it. Start there. Mm-hmm. Copy the team just exactly as it is, right? You know, proxy the cards if you have to. Proxy the dice. Who cares if you don't have what you need? Proxy it, because what you want to do is you want to just start playing it. And if you stay there, if all you ever do is just copy it, you're probably not going to have the success you want. So really the next thing, so you start with net decking, just copy the thing. You want to move from there to net learning and learn how to play the team you copy. So you've got to learn to play each element, and you've got to just play it lots and lots and lots and lots and lots. So we're going to kind of walk you guys through what we did with the Bard Blitz, I think. At least in part, we'll at least reference it as we go along.
Definitely.
And so we saw this team report. I I know I texted Randy. I'm like, have you seen this? Did you know you can win on the third turn with no Professor X? And my own first reaction was, you know, I saw that kind of written in the in Judgmental's blog, and I thought, there's no way. That can't be true. Is it true? And then I started, like, tinkering with it and looking at the support that was there and trying to figure it out. And I actually sent him a PM, and I said, hey, is this how that works? And he was kind enough, gracious enough to fire a message back, say, yep, that's exactly what most of the games look like. And there's actually a way to do it better if you use Blue Eyes Global the first turn to buy the Bard, and then you've got some extra energy floating around as you go. You can end up with an extra character or an extra mask for Relentless in the end. And so, you know, we just started, okay, well, that's how we play it. So we just start playing it against everything. And I think, like, as Randy and I started playing, and I, you know, I'm talking to Stuart and talking to Isaac, you know, we started throwing everything up against the wall, and Dave, you actually started a Google Doc. Tell us what you put in that Google Doc.
Yeah, so this was a Google Doc of every method that we could think of to defeat the Bard team. We started to think about all of the different cards and combinations that there were, both in terms of specifically countering Bard or countering elements of the team that would be in follow-up. Like, well, what about the inevitable prismatic spray to go behind it? And then as things were not working, we were logging in exactly why they weren't working. I think our goal was either let's break this team and say that, well, no, this does not work as advertised, you know, over the long haul, or let's figure out really the ins and outs of how to play this team. And I think our testing went so well right up to the relentless ban because we had worked through exactly how to respond to a great deal of threats that were out there already. I mean, we're like, okay, you could play the Venom. Oh, wait, no, that actually makes them roll a whole bunch of dice. It wipes, spray wipes him, and then they just need that right turn. And Parallax makes it so consistent. Okay, on to the next thing. And just looking through for so many different options. And we came to realize that most of the things that could hard counter it could, like, that team could be beaten, but not by a team that could really reliably beat anything else. And that's where we kind of went with that. But by trying to go so in depth with our testing and with everything that we were trying to throw up against it, and we're talking, you know, not just a game or two, but many, many games, all, you know, forcing the Bard to be the one going second and different things like that, just logging down. Nope, and here's how the Bard can get around that. So for just about any matchup with the Bard Blitz team, we had an idea of, oh, they're going to try to use Imprisoned. Well, we're going to make sure that we Blue Eyes the Bard before off the field before the turn that Imprisoned fires. Okay, next. You know, some things you have a better chance than others, but we had an idea of what those decisions needed to be. So that's where we go beyond, okay, here's how you run this team, which even a tournament report might tell you that, but into here's how you actually – running the system is very different from understanding how to play against the things that they're going to try and throw a wrench in the system.
Well, and to give a little background on the testing we did, we were lucky enough the week that kind of hit the net, we had opportunities to get together and play like two or three nights that week. And one night, I mean, we probably sat here for a couple hours and just threw the Bard Blitz against a Polygenzo team over and over and over. And, you know, another night we just threw it against a Lantern Ring team just over and over, just seeing what the Lantern Ring team could do to, you know, slow it down, to work against it. You know, another night we just threw it against a Gabi Parallax team just over and over. I mean, the Gabi Parallax team, that night really sticks out in my mind because those games were going so fast. I mean, no joke, we probably played 30 games that night, easily.
Yeah, easily.
But we were learning some great things about this Bard Blitz team. You know, what could we add to it where it wouldn't lose its bite against other teams but it might have a little bit of an advantage against Gabi. And, you know, we also looked at what can it do with the mirror match? Because if mm-hmm. this team is getting so popular, you know, it's going to run into itself. But yeah, it wasn't just sitting together for an afternoon playing, you know, one game against this team, one game against that team. It was, you know, a week's worth of work. And there was, I mean, like you said, Dave, I mean, we were all logging in and updating this Google Doc, putting our findings in it.
Yeah.
Totally. And I think the thing that that many reps does, right, like we weren't maybe as systematic in learning to play each element, learning to play the win condition, then learning, you know, the support, then learning the anti-threat tech that was on the team. We weren't as systematic about that, but we were so systematic in okay, we know what the ideal first turns are. Let's just keep doing the ideal first turns and see what the board state is at that time, you know, turn three, turn four. What do we do now? And as we threw the other teams that have been successful in the meta and in the competitive environment at it, we realized, man, there is really something here. And as we kept doing that, then we kind of picked up the nuance that you talked about, especially the example I think of, and you ran right over it. And I want to make sure, you know, people kind of hear about this. Like, if I know that Imprisoned is coming on my opponent's next turn, I can Blue Eyes my Bard at the end of my turn if I don't want to attack. And then Imprisoned, there's no way it can capture it because it's in my prep area, right? Like, And just seeing that and knowing how to play in advance of that, because here comes a threat. Well, what do I have that can mitigate that threat? Well, I can knock out my own character. You know, like it's going to cost me a turn, sure, but I'm also not going to have to buy another 4-cost character that will guaranteed be captured. So look at win conditions and. I think in big, broad categories, right? So direct damage is a win condition. Bard is obviously combat damage. And then there's a combo type win condition. Well, they might need several dice to fire at the same time. But then that could get pretty interesting. Or like a chain reaction like that that infinite burn team from the Midmo. Midwest Dice Masters Open, and so learning the win count, I would start there, right? Like know what the win condition is and learn it inside and out, learn it backwards and forwards, learn it up and down, learn what other things do to it, but know it forwards and backwards, inside and out. And And, you know, really the Bard Blitz brings just one win condition. I'm going to just keep swinging with characters that are going to get bigger than you can possibly imagine. Probably more of them than you can possibly block. And even if you can block them all for a couple more days, I'm going to prevent your characters from being able to block. So that's just that it is a one trick pony, and it's a pretty special trick. You know, I don't mean to, you know, disparage it by any regard, but learn the win condition inside and out.
It's one trick. It's a strong trick. It's a consistent trick.
Well, luckily a little less so now, but or at least as of May 1st.
Yeah.
But that's what it is, and we know that now, and so, you know, if you're playing against it, you know, hopefully you've done enough testing with it to know exactly what the pilot on the other side is going to try and do, and hopefully you've got some answers to it. But then, when we got into it a little bit more, and Judgmental sent me that message back. Actually, if you Blue Eyes for the Bard on the first turn, you can get an extra energy rolling in the engine. And I thought, man, that is really something special. And so we start playing with that. And so that's when you kind of get into some of the more support pieces, right? That Blue Eyes global on that team. If, if you can use the support to make it just a little bit more efficient, just a little bit more consistent, right? Those small percentages add up, turnover, and give you far more consistency down the road. And then, you know, we started looking at it and I realized, well, because of Blue Eyes, even if I'm not able to buy Bard on the first turn, like say I failed to roll a shield, it's actually possible to miss Bard on turn one, but if you can field a sidekick and buy Miri and Jar, you can still get to that turn three win by Blue Eyes-ing turn two for Bard. And it just, like, when you figure out how those pieces work and the how they integrate and really play off of one another, that's where a ton of consistency comes in those support pieces, right?
Exactly. And if it sounds technical, that's because it is. Where people incorrectly disparage net decking is that a lot of people net deck and stop there. There is nothing wrong with taking a team and saying, ooh, this definitely is something I am keen on trying. There's nothing wrong with that, but where people make a mistake is they say, okay, here's this, and here's the ideal buy order or whatever else, and then they go and they don't know how to make decisions outside of that, or very few of them. Maybe they can rely on piloting skills or whatever else, but not everybody is always that gifted of a pilot 100% of the time. My skills have gotten worse and worse as a tournament goes on because I'm not thinking as clearly because I don't know. I'm working on it. That was part of the point of the last episode and indeed the series. But that's where people say, oh, net decking, whatever. There's nothing wrong with net decking, but take the steps on that technical stuff like JT is talking about. If you want to have any chance of actually doing anything with it, then you have to know how to act in all of those different scenarios. And when do I re-roll this? Like, what does my roll have to look like on turn one to take the chance to re-roll to get a sidekick? That's a very basic one, and you can probably most Ice Masters players can probably very easily work that out in their head what it has to look like. But you need to have done that because the more decisions you make ahead of time before a tournament, the easier you're gonna. The easier you're going to find, you know, making those decisions in game because you've already done it, and then you go from there.
Yeah. So one of the things that Judgmental actually said in one of the private messages he sent me, and Bard Blitz is out there. I if he's mad at me, Mike, if you're mad at me for sharing this, I apologize, but I don't think he will be. I think it's a very technical play that you guys developed in advance of taking it to that WizKids Open. He said that if they saw on their first roll, on the first turn, if they saw Bolt, Shield, Energy, they would automatically re-roll one of the extra energies to try to get a sidekick. Because you can't screw it up if you only roll one. You can't. If it comes up a sidekick, you Blue Eyes it. If it doesn't, you buy Bard. You cannot screw up that roll if you have two energy plus shield plus bolt. And obviously a question mark in there anyway. I mean, if you have that setup, reroll one automatically because it adds efficiency. Don't have a great chance of getting a sidekick? Who cares? You can't screw it up. You have everything you need. If they saw that, they automatically rerolled one of those energies for a sidekick just to try and add efficiency. So, So that kind of technical play, as you look at the support, whether that's ramp, whether it's churn, like the ring global plus resurrection gives you. And one of the technical things about that is, man, when you resurrect, you want exactly five dice in your used pile. Right. And unless you're going to have a chance to use resurrection twice, then it's okay to have six dice, but you want exactly five because you want to make sure that engine rolls every turn and there's always dice in your used pile to make sidekicks out of on that team. So whether it's ramp, whether it's churn, whether it's combat tricks, transfer power and all those things, as you're learning the support that comes with a team and you're testing through that, like just try and break it. Just try and do a ton of different things so that you can see more clearly what the optimal play is, right? This is us moving towards optimum play. This is us trying to get better with our strengths, trying to minimize our weaknesses and do those things so that we don't make those mistakes. So as you look at the support that's there and you just learn it again, inside, outside, up, down, left, right, you know, until you can do backflips and do it in your sleep, because those are the things, as Dave said, it sounds technical. It is. Those technical plays are what make a difference over the long haul.
I just want to cut in real quick and talk about that ring, global, and resurrection combo real quick. This Bard team is, I mean, it's a special team right now, but that ring, global, resurrection, that combo, that has staying power in this game. That is something that is an engine that a team can be built around. And I mean, that was one of the most fascinating things running through this Bard team. Just, you know, I use the ring global, so that means I pull one of my dice from my used pile back to my reserve pool. The energy I spent goes out of play. You know, if I make a purchase, all of a sudden, hey, I've got 5 dice in my used pile because, you know, remember I pulled one out earlier in the turn. Now I can res. Now I'm not refilling my bag. And I mentioned my Fiend team that I was, you know, dabbling with for the past week. I've been using that engine on the Fiend team, and it's been amazing. I mean, that's a combo that you can just kind of plug in to another win condition to have that support. And it's a great thing to be able to add to your repertoire.
Oh, I completely agree. If you want to look at Dice Masters in a way that you have not yet at all, use Ring and Resurrection. And then once you get really good with that and how to do some used pile / transit zone management with it, then start to see what it's like when you have a different some different ramping globals on the other side of the board or on your team as well. It becomes a lot to juggle, and there's a game in and of itself just with the resource management from it. And if you get good at it, that it's a key skill, not just for those globals, but just for understanding the management of dice and energy and so forth within this game, using your resources. It is crazy. Probably an entire show could be done on ring resurrection scenarios. It's pretty crazy.
I just want to brag for a quick second here. I was pretty proud of myself. That Fiend team I was running, first Fiend I would get out was the Pit Fiend that did -2 to all other Fiends' costs. After I used the Ring Global, I would purchase the Hellhound that reduced the fielding of all Fiends by 1. I polyed out my Pit Fiend for the Hellhound I just purchased, and then used Resurrection to put the Pit Fiend back into my bag or prep area for next turn, and he has a fielding cost of 1 on all faces. So with my Hellhound I just polyed in, he'd be coming in for free. And I was doing it consistently every turn, and it felt good, and it was efficient because I'm getting that cost reduction. And it's all because of this Ring and Resurrection combo.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty neat, and that's a key part to the team that I think we spent, I know at least I myself spent like a couple hours one night playing against, playing with and against some other people here with the reserve pool, just working on improving that aspect. It's really cool when it's there, and it's something that's worth taking some time on.
Yeah, one final thought on it. So Randy and I kind of have a new local store, a new local scene we're trying to build up, and we did this this casual play thing the other day he was talking about. And I thought, you know, I want to take something that's really just feast or famine that can be a little bit of fun to play with. And so I brought the 6-cost limited wish. I brought the 1,000 Dragon Global. And I brought Polymorph and the rare Dracolich. And so my ideal first turn was to buy Limited Wish, and then ideal second turn was to make a sidekick using the Ring Global, buy Polymorph using the 1,000 Dragon Global, and then Rez to get both Limited Wish and Polymorph. And so ideal third turn was to get Wish and Polymorph, Wish for a Dracolich, and then Polymorph it in. And in more games than not, The dice rolled in my favor, and I was able to poly in a 7-cost character on my third turn with no PXG on the board because of this engine, because what this engine does is it gives you your first two purchases on your third turn, regardless of there being Professor X. Because, and it's consistent. It's not, well, I've got a, you know, like an 80% chance to draw what I want. It's, if you do it right, it's going to happen.
The big difference between this and using Professor X is Professor X lets you roll everything because you're moving sidekicks to your prep and you have no choice but to draw the dice you purchased. This, it's very selective with what you're rolling. You don't have the surplus of energy that you have with Professor X, but you are rolling exactly what you want to roll.
Yeah, it's fiction like you wouldn't believe. It's really cool. So let's get back into this specifically, JT. So we've talked a lot about the steps that we took with learning and playing each element of the team, looking at responding to threats and supporting stuff, especially there. How do we take this then to the next level?
So we've got to, well, just building on what we talked about last episode, right? We take our strengths and our weaknesses, identify your own strengths and the strengths of the team. How do those play together? So, like for Randy, I thought about this a lot. For you, like, you like to play an aggressive style. Bard wants to be aggressive, right?
Oh yeah.
So how do you take your strengths of kind of knowing what to do with a team that wants to just wreck face and just, you know, swing with big, mean, high attack characters? How do you meld those two together?
I don't know. I mean, like you said, I mean, like we've talked about this whole time, I mean, we net decked it and just started playing the crap out of it. Just run through the first couple turns. I don't know.
Well, okay. So what I'm thinking is your ability to see kind of when to attack with what, right? I know that if I attack with four characters and he's only got three blockers, at least one of those will get through. And you kind of see the ways to sit on a bolt for, you know, if he lets the bard through, it's going to have to cycle through my bag. I don't, you know, depending on how many you have in your used pile or what you've done, if you've already refilled your bag that turn, like, you know that you can sit on a bolt, blue eyes the bard and get him back next turn and probably knock out his entire field mm-hmm. on the way while keeping your other three attackers in the field because they're beefed up. So knowing that this that's what this team wants to do, like that melds with your style. When I when I started playing Polyjinzo, I net decked Indiemon's team. I absolutely net decked Indiemon's team from the Salt Lake Comic Con, and I said, well, he went undefeated with this thing or close to it. I don't recall Indy. I apologize, but you know, he just tore the place up with this. So I want to start playing it and see what I can do with it. So I looked at my strength of being able to pilot. Okay, if I just play this enough, I'll start to see things that I need to see in order to do that. And I'll start seeing them with more regularity and I'll start seeing them faster. So if I just put enough time in, I'll get to where I need to be. And so whether your strengths are in playing control and seeing those things and trying, well, what do I need to do to play this with those in mind? That's really what we want to talk about. You want to take your strengths, meld it with the team. What pieces match really well? The next thing to take this to the next level are isolating those weaknesses, whether they're in the team or in your play. So, Bard team, if it didn't fire, it's not exactly a glass cannon. Maybe it is a little bit, but it has a significant weakness to direct damage, right? When we were playing that Gabi Parallax yeah. team, man, it was kind of like go first and win because the Bard team had no way to stop any direct damage. And so if you play, you know, in that high pressure, go first and win. I don't mind being at one life every game if I'm always winning. You know, like that doesn't stress me out. Then that might be, you know, something to think about. So how do you isolate the weaknesses, both yours and the team's, and fix them or play around them? And then really the last thing, and this is the most key element of net learning, I think, is really making substitutions based on your strengths, your weaknesses, your tendencies, your preferred style of play, your thoughts on what's more important. Maybe it's a meta call. And then determining at what cost that substitution is worth it. So what do you take out of the team you net decked in order to make a substitution?
And the way to think of it is absolutely at what cost, because until you understand why every card is there, it's really difficult to just take something out and not have thrown off a balanced system and realize, oh, wait, this card absolutely needed to be there because this matchup and this matchup and this matchup become infinitely harder without it, or something along those lines. So you have to get through the whole part of realizing, here's the team, and here's why everything is there, and here's how it works, and all of these different scenarios, not just in a perfect world. Then you can understand how to make substitutions. Wow, it seems to be really weak against this, and I know I'm going to see this because my local meta always plays this. So this card is probably the most flexible spot, so let's do this. But then also try it. Don't just make the substitution and be done with it. And JT, I want to say something going back to a point you just made a little bit ago about how the strengths of the team play with your own. Maybe they don't. And that's okay, too, because if I recall, JT, you took that control team from Salt Lake City and you wanted to start working with it because control was an area that you felt weak in. And you wanted to grow that part of your game, and so you have. And I think you've pulled that team. It's still definitely on the control side of the spectrum. I think you pulled it a little bit mid-range with some of the stuff that you have done with it since then. But I think learning that was an integral means of your being able to play control and play against control.
Yeah, honestly, learning that team, because it's no secret I like to play combos, right? I loved Patch Avengers.
Phoenix Fastball.
That's kind of my jam. Like, what can I do that someone's not going to see coming? But honestly, when I dropped everything else to learn Polygenzo and play it, and I played it an awful lot, what it did is it really helped me see the board and understand what my strongest play was. So if I needed to buy a control piece, then buy a control piece. If I need to buy a pressure or an aggro piece, then I buy an aggro piece. And so what it did is it really helped me identify who's the beatdown, right? Like that's something you've talked about before, and I'll let you give a clear picture of that in just a minute. But what it did... So it allowed me to identify more what my more optimum play was. So if you want to explain what I meant by who's the beatdown?
Yeah, basically the idea of who's the beatdown, and this is like from a classic Magic the Gathering article, is that in every single game there are two sides. There's aggro and there's control. And it doesn't matter if you're playing a control team versus a control team or whatever you think your team is. In each game at varying states, one team is aggro and one team is control. The team that's aggro is the team that's going to be able to pound down the doors and win faster. The team with control is the team that's established a degree of inevitability and is going to win the long game. And understanding which position that you're in is going to go a long way towards, you know, you winning that game. And if you misread where you are, then you are far more likely to lose unless your opponent has also misread where they are, in which case it just kind of becomes crazy. That's certainly something that we could bring back as a topic for what that is and how it fits into Dice Masters. But if you search for that, there's again, an excellent article from years and years ago, and it's just as true today as it was then. Because even if it's a control team against a control team, one person is going to be slightly more controlling. One person has inevitability, and the other person is the one who's going to need to get that right character out and swing at the right time or use that ability at the right time. And if you're that player and you don't recognize it and you go for the long game, you're probably going to lose. At least your equity goes down significantly.
Yeah.
So that is the nutshell version of Who's the Beatdown.
Thank you. Thank you. So when we look
I'm
at
here
the
all week.
All right. So when we look at the whole picture, right? Like we take what are we doing when we net deck? What are we doing when we try and learn it, you know, learn a team that we've net decked? What are we doing when we try and take that team and take it to the next level? Try and tie all that together. We want to assign ourselves a little bit of homework. And hopefully deliver a couple closing thoughts. So you take a team, you copy it exactly as it is, you learn what the optimal plays are with that against anything you can think of, whether you know how to play it or not. So if you know how to play Polygenzo, play it against Polygenzo. If you don't know how to play it against Polygenzo, find someone who does in your clan or in your team or in your local shop and just throw it against the wall. Throw it against everything you can possibly think of so that you can learn it, learn the ins and outs, see the little technical plays that help efficiency, whether those include, you know, from the win condition, from support pieces, from the anti-threat tech that's on the team, all of it. And then look at yourself as a player and figure out, all right, what are the pieces about my play that tie in tightly here? What are the things that don't? What are the things that I can learn from this? What are the things that I want to substitute in? And how do I want to go about doing all that? What am I willing to give up for that? And then that's how we approached the Bard Blitz, and that's how I think we want to approach all of the next. You know, the next sliced bread that comes out in Dice Masters, right? That's how we want to look at all those things. So homework, Dave, what are you assigning for yourself?
So I just need to play a whole lot more. Need to get that going. So that's my homework still. Just keep playing, keep working on some stuff, keep rolling through turns, but also like start to bring. As I'm starting to solidify some things, bring that out and start playing against some other people.
Okay. Randy?
Well, I definitely want to keep looking at, you know, playing more aggressively, but, you know, more, I guess, important right now. I'm looking to go to Rochester in a few weeks, and I'm definitely going up to Canada for CanNats after that. And I really want to hammer out, you know, the teams I'm going to be using. I want to see if I can fine-tune my Mask Lantern Ring team that I had used before. Maybe using some things I've seen successful in some live streams. And I definitely want to fine-tune, you know, the variation we've been working on for the Bard Blitz. And just get those two teams as good as possible, kind of ready for, you know, whatever the meta might contain. And when I get to those locations, make the call on which one to run with. But I want both those teams to be prepped and ready to go, barring any, you know, Civil War additions.
Yeah. And for myself, I have a lot of ideas, and probably most of them are bad. So I just want to actually play them and find out for sure which ones have teeth and which ones don't. So my homework is to test more of the ideas that I have, actually to actually play them, like not just against myself, but against you know, one of the guys here on the staff team, or a few others that I've connected through Hangouts to try and play, and actually get, you know, dice on a playmat and see what happens.
Can't argue with that. The only thing that I would say in wrapping up the whole concept here is something that I said earlier here. It's something that I said recently on the article about quadrant theory, if you saw that the other Sunday. It comes back to not just knowing that it's good because you heard it was good, but knowing that it's good because you know that it's good and you know why it's good. whether that's a team, whether it's a card, or anything else. Your skills as a player will infinitely improve when you start to get behind the whys of a team and not just the cards that are on the deck list.
Yeah. Yeah, because you can take a whole bunch of good cards and put them on a team, but if you don't know how they play together, if you don't know what the order, the sequence should be to make the desired effect, mm-hmm. then you're really liable to just say, well, this Bard Blitz thing is good, but I don't really know why I need the ring on here. Maybe I'll just put Gabi on here, like you know, I mean, and that's. Like, not that that's a terrible substitution if you're going for something a little bit different, but you take away the engine.
Yeah.
Like,
what's the plan?
Yeah, exactly.
We come back to having a plan a lot, and if you net deck a team and don't put the work into it, you've gone from there was a plan. Whoever constructed the team had a plan. If you are unable or unwilling to discern what that plan is before you take it or do anything with it, then you're not going to be able to be very successful.
Yeah. Good point. Yeah.
All right. Well, this brings us to the close of the episode. Thank you all for listening. I know that you can spend your time in many different ways, and we are truly thankful that you spend it with us. The Attack Zone is a production of the Reserve Pool Network, production assistance from RJ Retro. Theme music courtesy of Nine Inch Nails, shared via Creative Commons at remix.nin.com. Promotional consideration given in the form of review product. Don't forget to check out our other podcast, The Reserve Pool, every single Thursday. Have a good night, everybody, and thank you so much for listening.
Cheers.
Good night.
So, you guys won't get this joke, but I'll tell it anyway.
Oh, boy.
It's a healthcare joke. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
HIPAA.
HIPAA who?
Can't tell you.
Why wouldn't we get that? We have to sign that stupid thing every time you fill a prescription.
Oh, well, maybe you get it. I don't know.
I didn't get it.
Randy didn't get it.
Oh, Randy. That's all right. That's all right.